and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. So I've been in Detroit an awfully long time, most of my life, in fact. And as long as I can remember, which is way back to the 1970s and 1980s when I was growing up here, we've had this awful reputation for being a violent and unsafe city, deserved or not. In fact, one of my earliest memories about crime in the city was a line from a movie, Airplane, which came out in 1980. And this line was uttered during a super violent drunken brawl in a bar. And a character pauses during the scene and says, "It was worse than being in Detroit." I can, of course, remember the swell of homicides during the 1970s and our flirtations with the murder capital of America title. I can remember being a small kid and watching the news, hearing about the murders that were taking place and what we should be doing to prevent them. I remember the introduction of crack to the city's drug trade in the 1980s and the way it ushered in an entirely new shade of violence and killing. I can remember starter jackets and Air Jordans being the reason that people got robbed and sometimes harmed or killed on the city's streets, also in the 1980s. And of course, I've seen how the disinvestment and abandonment of our city over the last 30 or 35 years has sadly invited and encouraged violence to flourish. And also, as long as I can remember, we have been anguishing in this city, especially those of us who live here, over how we should make the city safer. What should we be doing to prevent the kind of crime that we all live with? Even as crime trends down in America and has over several decades, there is still in Detroit a pinpoint attention to the idea of reducing crime, especially violent crime, and on what levers we can pull as a community or through policing to make the city safe, or at least safer for those of us who live here. We have tried all kinds of things over a long period of time. And this is an issue that just continues to challenge and confound us. A new Slate podcast called One Year recently took a look back to the 1980s here in Detroit and at an event that brought real focus to the city's violent crime and tried, through a grand gesture by one of the city's most influential sports stars, to make a difference. There was no more revered pro athlete in Detroit during the 1980s than Isaiah Thomas, who was, of course, the star point guard for the Detroit Pistons and someone who brought us two championships in the late 1980s and early 90s. And in 1986, dismayed by the violent crime that was all over the people of Detroit, Thomas introduced the idea of No Crime Day, a kind of break for the city, just one day where everyone was supposed to take a pause and not partake in the violence that defined too many people's lives. That day occurred this month, 36 years ago. A new Slate podcast called One Year dives into that day. In the episode on podcast host and national editor for Slate, Josh Levine, he digs into why fear was so high in Detroit at the time, why Isaiah Thomas wanted to help lower crime in the city, and what happened after No Crime Day ended. It's a really interesting look at a different time in the city when a problem that we still struggle with met with innovation, met with a big idea to try to turn us in a different direction. That's where we want to begin the conversation today, with what happened then, what's happening now, and what the connection is between those two. I want to welcome Josh Levine, the host of One Year, to Detroit Today. Josh, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So let's talk about what No Crime Day was and where it came from. As I said in the open, I grew up here, and in the 1980s, I was a teenager. I do not have any memory of this happening. Now, of course, as a 15-year-old, when this happens, I was pretty absorbed in my social life and the other things that you pay attention to in high school. But talk about how big a deal this was and how Isaiah Thomas came up with this idea.
Yeah, that's interesting to me to hear that you weren't aware of it. There was a huge amount of media coverage, both locally and nationally, about No Crime Day, because Isaiah was such a huge celebrity and such an influential person in that moment. And he did make it an explicit mission of No Crime Day to go out and do outreach to young people in Detroit by doing public service announcements. And it wasn't just him. Magic Johnson, Bill Cosby did PSAs as well. But he spent a lot of time just traveling around Detroit and going to schools and delivering this message, like you said in your open, that let's just have one day in the city at a time when violent crime was such a concern. Let's just have one day where that isn't a concern, where we can all take a break. And not just that, but also where we can show each other and show the world that Detroit isn't the Detroit that you talked about that was kind of name-checked as a joke in Airplane, that was known as the murder capital of the United States, where Detroit and Detroiters could prove that they weren't that, and that they could, the people of Detroit had the capability to be and do something different.
And I want to put this in a little bit of context, too, for people who maybe were not around in the 1980s. But there's something about this that strikes me as being in the same category, I guess, as lots of other things that we did in the 1980s. There was almost an obsession, it seems, with big events, kind of grand gestures, as I described this in the open, that would lead us to a solution for a big problem. I'm thinking of Live Aid or Farm Aid or the other kinds of things that we saw celebrities doing in that time period that were designed to draw people's attention to something. And the idea was, hey, we're going to do this, and then after that, things are going to be different. You talked to Isaiah Thomas, of course, for this podcast. But I wonder if he acknowledges or can see that this was a thing. This was a big thing in the 80s, and we did it kind of over and over again.
Yeah, one that wasn't as celebrity focused as the others you mentioned, but was huge in 1986, was Hands Across America.
Right. Right.
The event to raise money to fight homelessness. And so, yeah, Isaiah had gotten the idea for No Crime Day from his hometown of Chicago, where it had taken place a few years earlier in the 1980s, and had not been as large of an event as what he ended up putting together in Detroit. But he certainly understood what his influence was as a celebrity, and that people would listen and pay attention to him because of his status as a basketball star. And he tried to leverage that to his advantage, again, by not just lending his name to it, by calling in Magic Johnson and other stars, and, you know, saying, you know, what he told me was, I had a responsibility given my platform to do something in this community, in his adopted community. And so he wasn't naive to think that just as a celebrity, he could snap his fingers and change endemic systematic issues that have been bedeviling urban America for generations. But he thought, hey, at least people will listen to me if I say something.
And as you point out, they did. Talk about the run-up to No Crime Day and the day itself. This was, as you say, this was a very big event, had a lot of attention, and a lot of people turned out to do the things that that Isaiah said we should do on that day, rather than be part of the violence that defined the city.
Yeah, so it was announced that it was going to happen in the summer of 1986, and then that led to lots of coverage in the press. I mean, Isaiah and Coleman Young were on the Today Show right before No Crime Day. There were national feature stories and newspapers, and there's also just a ton of coverage in the Detroit News, Detroit Free Press, local media, and all of that. And so there was this sense of anticipation and this, questions about, is this going to work? What's going to happen? And there was also a very kind of vibrant and at times heated debate about whether No Crime Day was an appropriate concept given what was happening in Detroit, whether it was naive, simplistic, whether something else should have been done in its place. And so on the day itself, what the day was there was a march, there was a rally at Hart Plaza. There was also community encouraged to turn on porch lights at night to show a level of solidarity. And, it was raining. And if you go back and look at the video that the Detroit Historical Society has posted, you can see that during the rally itself, when Isaiah got up there, he talked about how the sun was breaking through the clouds. And there were, more than 10,000 people in Hart Plaza who turned out to see him and to be among, people who shared the same concern for their community that they did. And so there was a feeling of, there was music, there was a feeling of kind of excitement that day, that morning.
And it does become this big event, as you point out, but it doesn't exactly, even on that day, achieve what we wanted. Talk about the things that happened that day that kind of exposed the idea, I guess, as just a little Pollyannish, given the things that were going on in Detroit at that time.
Yeah, I don't think your listeners will be surprised to hear that there was, in fact, crime on No Crime Day. Our podcast wasn't intended as any kind of gotcha to say he said there wouldn't be crime and there was crime.
Right.
But what we did do is speak extensively to survivors, people who in one case had his partner on the Detroit police force was killed on No Crime Day. Mm-hmm. In another case, the sisters of a teenage boy who was killed on No Crime Day, and sort of delve deep into those stories, their lives and backgrounds up to that day and what happened on the day, and then how those survivors have kind of dealt with the aftermath of it. One of the big stories coming out of that day, the New York Times ran a story and the headline was about this police officer, Everett Williams, who was killed on No Crime Day. And that sort of became, in some ways, in a lot of ways, the way in which No Crime Day was looked at and remembered, not as this moment of hope and possibility, but of kind of, I guess, failure would be a harsh way to put it. But that's kind of the way it was framed in a lot of the coverage and the way it was thought of.
Yeah. I want to play a little clip of Isaiah talking about No Crime Day and whether it failed. You got him to kind of open up about that. Let's listen to what he said.
There's always going to be critics. And by the way, the critics, they're not always wrong. Now, when you say fail or failure to some people, they would laugh at that. Because I know from growing up in that environment, one night of sleep where you don't have to worry about someone hurting you or taking something from you or killing you, if that only happened in one household, it was a huge success.
Yeah. I mean, you can hear in his voice all this time later that kind of emotion about what he was trying to achieve and why. Because, of course, Isaiah is from Chicago, grew up in an environment that wasn't all that different from what he found here as an adult that people were living with in Detroit. And as he says, look, if one person had a better day that day because there wasn't a crime that took place that might have otherwise, then it's a success. It's a really interesting way to think about, again, this idea of these big ideas that were the way that so many people were approaching these problems in the 1980s.
There is a sort of strength and power that one can draw from the mere kind of presence of other people at an event like a march and a rally, just to know that you're not alone in your concern for your city, and kind of laying a marker down, like, we all care and we're going to come together to try to do something. I think the thing that's really interesting to think about now, and I talked about this with the city's then public information director, Georgella Muirhead, mm-hmm. is the framing of the day as No Crime Day. And it just, I think, opened up Isaiah and the city up to a degree of criticism and an obvious kind of gotcha moment, right? But what she argued, and I think it's a good argument, is that in that moment, Detroit needed to be bold and mm-hmm. and needed to say something that would get people's attention. And so she, in my mind, kind of memorably told me, what are we going to call it? Like, we should have less crime day? Like, no, that's not going to get anyone's attention. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a certain, you know, amount of admiration I think we could have for somebody, anyone in any field who's willing to put themselves out there and take a risk of maybe being ridiculed and putting themselves out there that maybe they would be perceived as a failure. But like trying to do something was a very kind of an act of resistance in that moment when it seemed like there was nothing anyone could do.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation with Josh Levine, national editor for Slate and host of the 1 Year podcast. We're talking about No Crime Day, which happened here in Detroit in 1986, was led by Detroit Pistons star Isaiah Thomas. We're talking about what happened during that day and what it meant in the story's long narrative of the fight against violent crime. We're going to talk a little, when we come back, about what happens in the years following 1986 and what's going on now in the city of Detroit. We want to hear from you as well. Do you remember No Crime Day in Detroit in 1986? Do you remember the event? What did you think of it? What did it make you think about? Did it make a difference in your view? Also, give us a sense of what you think about crime in Detroit some 40 years later. What are we doing better with violent crime? Do you feel safer in the city than you did before? Also, what do you think we should do to reduce the crimes that we still have and still endure in the Motor City? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Mary in Oxford, Dan in Southfield, we'll start with you when we get back. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
ask on this day that we all chill and make it a crime-free city, a day where we can all feel safe.
Crime's root causes were tough to grapple with, but the solution Isaiah was proposing, that was simple.
September 27th is No Crime Day. I'm asking the dope man on this day, don't sell dope. I'm asking you who steals for a living, on this day, don't steal. I'm asking you who kills for a living, on this day, let him live.
That, of course, is Detroit Pistons star Isaiah Thomas back in 1986 calling for No Crime Day here in Detroit. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We are looking back at that year and that event in 1986, No Crime Day here in Detroit, and talking about how big a deal it was, what it accomplished, and how it fits into the really long narrative of anti-crime activity here in Detroit, something that has really defined my entire life here in Detroit from the 1970s up through the 2020s. We want to hear from you as well during this conversation. Give us a call. Tell us if you remember No Crime Day. Tell us if you remember taking part, perhaps, in some of the events that day. What did you think about it? What did you think about that kind of gesture as a way of trying to draw attention to the city's crime problems and maybe point toward solutions? Also, give us a call and let us know what you think about the crime we still deal with in the city of Detroit today, and what we ought to be doing to try to make that less something that we all just live with us. We've got Josh Levine with us. He is the host of the podcast called 1 Year, which recently took a look back at No Crime Day, talked with Isaiah Thomas about his involvement with it and his expectations and how he felt about what was accomplished that day. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Let's start with Mary in Oxford today. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Uh-huh. I must say, I do not recall No Crime Day, but I do recall a woman named Emily Gale in the 1970s who started the movement Say Nice Things About Detroit.
Yep.
And I just saw an article from 2015 in Trains Detroit. She's living in Hawaii, but she does come back to Detroit. She tries to keep that movement going. It was on T-shirts and bumper stickers.
Yep.
And I don't know if that movement created a more positive persona for the city or not, but I just wanted to bring that up because that's the one I remember.
Yeah, Mary, I of course, I remember that too, and I know Emily. She's a friend of mine now as an adult, and I remember as a kid admiring the things that that she was doing for the city. And again, that kind of big gesture, right? That saying, say nice things about Detroit, that just became infectious. I mean, it was on bumper stickers. It was painted on the side of one of the buildings downtown, one of the first buildings you would see if you got off the Lodge Freeway onto Jefferson. Say nice things about Detroit. She was also really instrumental in starting the there was a run, a marathon that she helped start here in Detroit that I think is the progenitor, at least, of the Free Press Marathon that takes place every year still. And so it did have a long-term effect, and she's somebody who has had a lot of influence over our reputation, certainly, in Detroit, and somebody who loves the city quite deeply and shows that all the time. That's a great memory, Mary. I'm glad you called to share that. Let's go next to Munir in Detroit. Munir, what's on your mind?
Hey, Stephen, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I just wanted to say that it's unfortunate that that even though it wasn't successful, I think it was a little Pollyannish thinking that it would just be no crime. I think that was an impossible bar to set. But I do think it should have been continued because it's about the long-term struggle and fight to change the hearts and minds of people, especially young people. So over time, I think it should have been an annual event and celebration and encouragement where we engage the youth to change that mindset. And also, I just wanted to highlight a friend of mine. His name is Khalil Muhminoon. He's a he's an imam here or minister, Islamic minister here in the city of Detroit. Every year he does a Chill Don't Kill event.
Yeah.
And normally it's small, but it's been gathering some steam, in which some of the Muslim ministers and people in our community come out and engage the youth, engage the community, and really encourage love and respect for one another, and to kind of have discussions on what the community needs in order to heal this crime epidemic that we have. And, you know, it's a little disingenuous as well in regards to the media, you know, back then to or just anyone to kind of label it as a failure.
Yeah.
Because we know how things work. Things change over time. And things have to, and movements have to build a momentum.
Yeah.
And I think,
that's a great way to think about it, Munir, that you've got to build momentum, and maybe you start with a big event and it grows from there. Josh Levine, you referenced a little bit of what the media coverage of No Crime Day was after it happened, but talk more about how this was portrayed, especially because of the high-profile murder that took place that day. But my understanding is that there were four murders in the city that day, which even for Detroit is an unusual day and was even back then.
Yeah, those killings, but particularly the killing of police officer Ever Williams, did dominate a lot of the coverage of No Crime Day. Mayor Coleman Young was asked about it. Isaiah was asked about it. And that was kind of, if you were just glancing at coverage and saw the headlines, that was probably going to be what the headline was that you saw in your newspaper. But there were, you know, certainly there's a vast range of coverage on all subjects in media, and so you could certainly find stories about how there were a lot of positive things that happened that day, about block clubs getting together, about people coming out to support each other, about you know, there were No Crime Day scholarships that Isaiah was responsible for issuing. And the way that he talked about it before and during that 1986 event was that he wanted it to be an enduring thing, and not just in Detroit. He talked about, we should have one in LA that Magic Johnson does, and one in Boston that Larry Bird does. And after 1986, those ambitions got scaled back, and eventually the event did peter out. But he thought of it in the same way that Munir did, that this shouldn't be just a one-day event, that it should be something enduring and something that should build, and just for various reasons that didn't end up happening.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Munir, really appreciate the call and the perspective there. Let's go to Ian in Ferndale. Ian, what's on your mind?
Hi there. I was calling in to say that I've actually never heard of No Crime in Detroit Day, but you know, I'm 26 years old, and I've grown
You're
up
a little young for that.
Well, I guess so, but I mean, I definitely have the connotation of Detroit being a crime-ridden place inserted into my head from, like, growing up. Like, my grandma grew up in Kirby and Trumbull before. Not, she didn't grow up there. She's from Mississippi, and that speaks for itself. But I'm trying to say that she lived in Detroit before the White Flight. She flew, and then, you know, it's 25 years of, oh, don't go down there, you're going to get killed, and everything else. And so to me, I've had like some crime happen to me, like in Detroit where like my car gets broken into. But if you go on the Ferndale Forum, you hear about cars getting broken into all the time. I mean, my first semester at Wayne State was the semester that that police officer got shot and killed searching for like a stolen bicycle or something. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've been around for like Noel night having people have random shootings and stuff. But that happens in Macomb County. That happens in Chicago. That happens all over the place. And so I think that it's just kind of a disguised or like covert way of insinuating that Detroit, again, has crime. And this way we can get some state funding to say, oh, yeah, Detroit's a dangerous place and you better be careful and only come down here between like, you know, dawn and dusk when the storefronts are open. But yeah. Maybe that's a unique perspective.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no question that Detroit and its demographics, how black it is, how poor it is, really have a lot to do with the way that it's talked about and thought of in the context of crime. And that's not to say that there isn't a lot of crime in Detroit. There is. That's not to say there isn't a lot of violence in Detroit. There is. It's all unacceptable. But there is, you know, there's a layer of derision, I think, that gets heaped on the city, especially in a historical sense, that is about who we're talking about and the kinds of people that we're talking about, both in terms of perpetrators and victims in Detroit, and you know that makes it look different than it does from other places. Josh, I wonder what you make of, or what Isaiah made of, the idea of this being, you know, a city where African Americans are both the victims of crime, but most of the perpetrators, of course, because that's who lives here, are also African American, and the effect that has on the way, especially outside the city, people think of it.
Yeah, again, the then public information director, George L. Muirhead.
Yeah,
she told me that, yeah, she thought that the murder capital label and reputation, part of that was pathologizing the city's majority black residents. Mm-hmm. At the same time, she thought that crime in Detroit was not a myth. And you get into these sort of thorny situations where in predominantly black communities, there's the issue of both over-policing and under-policing, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's the issue of how do we kind of listen to and serve and heed what victims are saying and people that live in those communities who have to experience crime, but also not want to, as a previous caller said, make Detroit out to be some sort of special, unique place that's afflicted by this problem that affects so many communities of all different types in America. And so that, I think, was why No Crime Day as a concept was so fascinating to me, because it fixed attention on Detroit, potentially in both a positive way and in a negative way, that it invited people to look at Detroit and ask if it was living up to this idea that let's just have no crime for even one day.
Yeah.
And what Isaiah and Georgella said to me was, you know, if you're in this position in this moment where you're being talked about as the murder capital, the idea that we're going to harm our reputation by doing anything,
right,
is a little bit absurd. Like, Detroit was already in a position where it was talked about and thought about in a certain way. And so they just wanted to do something. They weren't concerned that maybe they would get negative PR because Detroit already got so much of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Ian, really appreciate the call. Let's go next to Robert in Detroit. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm thinking that, you know, we need to have more intentionality and mindfulness. And I don't really like focusing on the negative, like No Crime Day. Instead, we should say what we want, and maybe that's love. And instead of thinking about once a year, we think the first of the month is Love Day, and you do something nice for somebody else.
Hmm.
Or, you know, talk to somebody you wouldn't normally talk to, somebody different from you, maybe pay for someone's coffee or whatever. Just do something nice on a regular basis. And people in Detroit are already great people. We hear all the negative stories all the time, but I know so many great people, and we don't focus on that.
Yeah. Robert, I really love that idea, and I hope somebody is listening who maybe can get something like that started, or maybe you will. The idea of a day when we're all doing something for each other and trying to celebrate the fact that we all live here and want to live here and want to have good lives and want to make sure everybody else does too. That's a wonderful thought. Josh Levine, before I let you go, I want to give you a chance just to talk a little about 1 year and what it is and why you chose this particular story about Detroit for the podcast.
Yeah, the premise of our podcast series is that each different season is about a different year in American history and the people and events that defined that year, that changed things, or that attempted to change things. And for our season on 1986, there are so many kind of broad themes that maybe you or your listeners think of when you think about that time. And crack, the crack years in America was one of them. Mm-hmm. I mentioned homelessness with Hands Across America. You might also think of like synth music or the excesses of Wall Street or any sort of number of things. And what I try to do and what our team tries to do is, instead of doing episodes that are just like, let's do an episode about, you know, crack or about crime or about anything else, just to pick an individual narrative that is compelling, because there are people that are doing things and trying to make a difference and, you know, fighting against, you know, whatever in society might be holding them back, and that sort of get at those broad thematic issues through the story of No Crime Day in Detroit. And so that's what we try to do. And I was, you know, obviously grateful that Isaiah agreed to talk about it. And as you said earlier, it's something that he still gets emotional about, that he sees as a kind of defining event in his life, and that he wants people to know about and wants to get the story out.
Yeah. Okay, Josh Levine, was really great to have you here with us on Detroit Today, and really great to listen to 1 year and Detroit's featuring in that podcast. Thanks so much.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we are going to stay here in Detroit, but pivot a little, talk about the Wayne County tax foreclosure auction, which recently began again after several years of hiatus. This is the process by which, if you don't pay your taxes, the county auctions off your house to somebody else who's willing to pay those taxes. Alex Alsop, who is Vice President of Research and Development at ReGrid, which is a property data and location intelligence company, will join us to talk about what happened last week and what we can expect in the future as we go back into this process. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.